This week, we're listening to a pair of witness reports, both recorded on the night of February 9th, 1977. These recordings come to us courtesy of the National UFO Reporting Center, New Fork, located in Seattle, Washington. And while the events the witnesses describe take place over 1,000 miles apart, the descriptions given in their testimonies lend clues to a connection. Before we dive in any further, I would also like to make a note that this audio has been enhanced using AI. Links to the original tracks will be available in the show notes, though I'd like to warn you, it was pretty damn staticky. With all that said, let's dive in. I didn't see you there.
Something big is going on here.
From hunting ghosts to Bigfoot.
Paranormal, UFOs, true crime, and more.
We won't just be spouting articles.
I was researching for your entertainment.
The beginning of a new world.
The best guac you'll ever fucking eat.
True story.
It's basically like one day you walk outside and you see that the ants are playing with matches.
This is the Black Cat Report. See you on the other side.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 70 of the Black Cat Report. My name is Gil, and my unlicensed co-pilot this evening is the one and only Joey.
Driving us straight into a mountain, I am.
Hell yeah.
Big episode 70.
Big episode 70. Now, as I said up top, the audio we're about to hear is raw, meaning these are recordings of actual reports made by witnesses less than an hour after their encounters. The two people calling in are separated by over 1,000 miles, but the real brow raiser comes in the details. So, if you smoke, I suggest lighting up now, closing your eyes, and enjoying the ride. While you're doing that, let me break down what to keep an eye out for.
Wait, Gil, are we investigating?
Oh, we're investigating. Live, like, right now. And asking anyone listening to throw in their two cents, you know, comment on Spotify, send us an email at contact@blackcat.report, or hit us up on Instagram. If you know of any other cases that took place on this night or eerily similar stories, send them our way, please. I would really like to build off of this because I feel like there's something here. Right now, there's no articles about these events, no documentaries, nothing, just the raw recordings and early signs of breadcrumbs. So we're dropping another first here tonight. It's a mini first, but it's a first. Now, as I was saying, what to look out for. First, size, shape, color, and behavior of the UFO. Second, how the vehicles are influenced by it. And third, the directions it leaves and comes from.
Yeah, so pretty much Gil told you to smoke, put that smoke down, put that drink down, pick up a pen, pick up a piece of paper, put that piece of paper on the ground or on the table, wherever you are right now, the steering wheel, preferably not while you're driving. So yeah. If you're driving, just listen.
Look, we all have a private stenographer. Just bring them on board. They got this.
Yes.
But I would say, though, there is a lot of clues in these testimonies. The first audio clip is going to be longer than the second one. And, well, you're going to hear right off the bat, the witness was still very worked up about what they had just experienced. Most of the rest of the details in terms of, like, locations and what's going on, it's going to be covered in the actual witness reports that we're about to hear. So let's dive in.
Oh, we all shook up, okay?
Uh-huh.
We were driving down from northern Arizona, Elk Creek. This thing followed us, and it ain't no jet. There ain't no planet or star, okay? I think it's landed, okay?
Uh-huh.
On the left side of Phoenix, right off Bell Road. If you don't want to check it out, I don't care. But I wouldn't call if I didn't think it was serious. We're not the only ones that's seen it. A couple other people did too.
Okay, now,
you want to know a little bit about it?
Well, first of all, which highway were you driving on?
Well, what's the number of that highway that we were driving on? 89? Hurry up, this is correct.
That's okay, we want to get it right.
Oh my God, I'm scared. You know what happened? It came about at least 25 feet to us, okay?
Okay.
And then it kind of swerved, and the colors of it are like green, blue, and red, all right? Now, we're in Phoenix now, okay?
Uh-huh.
Okay, we were driving. My husband, he had his foot on the gas. We were going about 60 miles an hour, right? Our speedometer went all the way down to about 45, and he didn't take his foot off the gas pedal.
I-17
is the number of the highway.
Interstate 17.
All right.
And you were driving in which direction? Towards?
We were going, I guess you'd say south.
Okay.
Going towards Phoenix.
Okay.
Oh.
Now, start right from the beginning.
Okay.
Just tell me everything you saw and everything that happened.
We want to start from the very. Okay. My slow down. Can I hold up? All right. We were driving down Interstate 17, okay?
Huh?
All right. I just happened to look up in the sky, and I thought it was a star, you know? But that thing kept coming in closer and closer, all right? Okay, we started to go a little bit faster because it kind of scared us a little bit. And it kind of changed colors. And it had like a dome light on the bottom of it. Okay?
Okay.
And we pulled into a gas station in Cornish Junction, Arizona. They talked to a couple other people and they said it looked like a UFO, a mobile gas station. It's the only one there. And they said that they've been watching this thing, okay? It's been there for a few other nights.
Uh-huh.
All right. As we kept driving on, okay, we left the gas station. It seemed to follow us, all right? Okay, we got into Phoenix. We're at another gas station. I'm talking to you right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we see it, and it looks like it landed. Okay? But it came about 25 feet up to us. This is when we was up by Oak Creek.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what it wants or what the heck it is.
Okay, now when you first spotted this, where was this in relation to you as you were driving down the highway?
I was on the passenger side.
Right.
I'd say, let's see. Oh, what would it be? What direction in the sky?
The west
side.
Okay.
And then as we came in, it seemed to like cut in front of us, you know?
Yeah.
And then it kind of went back. It moved back, and then it came in real close to us.
Well, did this thing pass across the highway in front of you?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And then as we got into Phoenix, it was more or less like on the left-hand corner, which would be facing the east. Or facing going towards California.
West.
Right, west. I don't know.
Okay.
But the reason why I phoned up is because our speedometer went all the way down. And he didn't take his, then it came back up, and he didn't even take his foot off the gas pedal. In our car, we just got it. There's nothing wrong with it.
Uh-huh. Okay, now, what shape did this thing have?
Okay, it had like a spiral shape. I don't know if you've ever seen that before. But it had like blue lights coming out from each side, all right? But it would change colors. Like it was rotating. And then it had like a white dome thing underneath, okay? And then as we got into Phoenix, it turned real red.
Okay. Did this seem to follow you into Phoenix?
Yeah. That's what scared us.
Okay, now after you got...
Just a minute. What?
No.
Okay. All right. Right, I called up the Central Aviation, okay?
Uh-huh.
See what they could do. And as soon as I called them up, the thing seemed to go off into the sky, okay?
Okay, which direction did it go?
It went off into the west, further off into the west.
Okay.
And then it came back in, and it lowered down, and it looked like it was landing.
Okay.
It landed, but the bird and it came back. My husband is talking to me at the same time.
Okay, now, after this appeared to land, did you see it anymore after that?
No, I don't see it.
Okay.
I don't see it now, but it must have landed someplace.
How large would you say it was? Could you compare it with
that? Oh, my God, it was huge. It looked like the size of, geez, have you ever seen one of those big jets?
747?
Yeah, something like that, yes. Except the lights on it was like a gigantic dome light, and it kept changing colors.
Okay, but you could definitely see the outline of a vehicle of some kind?
Yes, there was no plane.
Okay, did you hear any sound?
No, but all I could tell you is exactly what happened to us with the speedometer.
Okay, now did anything else unusual happen, like were you playing your radio in the car?
We were playing the radio, but nothing, I didn't hear no interference. You know, when you're high up in the mountains, you have interference anyway.
Okay, how about the traffic on the highway?
There was about three or four of the cars, but when it came real close up to us, nobody was out there.
No other cars were around?
No, not until we got into the gas station, and as we pulled out, more traffic started coming down. But where we were at that time, nothing was around.
Okay, now that would be at Cornish Junction where you stopped the gas station. Okay, then after you left there and you saw it again, was there any more traffic around?
Yeah, but it went further off into the west, and like I told you, it disappeared, and then it came back, and it looked like it landed.
Okay, now would this be, did this appear to come down within the city?
Let's see, just a minute. What would that be out that way? California? If the thing's that big, okay?
Uh-huh.
And if it's brightening up the sky that big when we've seen it land, it could be going towards, which way is that, Vegas? Or what? Well, what's the closest town right there?
I would say Blythe.
You know where Blythe is?
Yes.
Okay, that's what it looked like. But okay. It looks close to us because it's so big.
Okay.
But it could be out in the desert, too.
Okay, now when this came down at its lowest point, how, or could you estimate the altitude?
Yeah, I'd say about, the lowest point that I saw, I'd say about 25 feet.
Okay, did it illuminate the ground when it came that close?
I couldn't see that. Okay. I couldn't see that, but I did see the thing come down.
Okay.
And I seen it about that low.
And then you could definitely see the thing go back up again.
All right, but when I seen it the last time, the thing just landed.
Right.
It didn't go off into the sky. It was coming down in like a straight line.
Vertically straight down.
Right.
Okay.
I've never seen that like this before. This is weird.
When this is very important. When this object crossed in front of you or back and forth across the highway, which direction were you heading then?
We were heading south, and it looked like it was going to the left.
It would go to your left across the highway?
Right.
And then did it come back?
Right, and then
to the right.
And then as we kept on going down, we were like more or less on a straight highway, right?
Right.
And it was to the left side. When we got into the gas station, it was to the right side, which is the west.
Okay. And what? Do you have the time that happened?
Yeah, just now. What time was that? What time was it all left? Okay.
7:30.
It was about 7:30, but when we just see it land, or whatever you want to call it, it's about 9:35.
Okay.
So it's been with us for about 2.5 hours. And now all of a sudden it's gone that I'm talking to you. Now it just doesn't make no sense for us or for that thing up there.
Okay, how's the sky conditions there tonight?
Very clear. It's black, but it's clear.
Okay, now, when you got out of the car, you didn't hear any sound at all?
No.
Okay.
When we was at the Cornish Junction?
Right.
No. It was very still, and it was kind of cold. We didn't hear nothing, but we seen it.
Okay, now, when it made its closest approach to you, could you estimate the distance?
Well, like I said, about 25 feet, but it was... You want the altitude off the ground, or how close in front of us?
Well, both at that point.
I'd say about 25 feet in front of us, and I'd say about 55-75 feet in the air.
Okay, now, was this the point where the speedometer dropped?
Yeah.
Okay, did that ever repeat itself?
No.
Okay, now, is that the only unusual thing that happened?
That's the only weird thing that happened to the speedometer.
Did either one of you have any physical or mental phenomena of any kind take place?
No, nobody.
Okay, have you traveled this roadway before?
We go up the creek every once in a while, you know, like we go camping up there or something.
Okay, would it be unusual for a lack of traffic on a main interstate highway like that?
Yeah, it is, because when we went up there today, we went up there camping, okay? But the campgrounds were all closed. We thought since Lincoln's birthday, right, a lot of people would be going up there. But since the campgrounds are closed, not very many people are on the road. We didn't know that until we got up there. So we went up there, we had dinner, and then we left, because there was no place to camp over.
Right. Okay. Can we get back to you if we need more information?
Oh, beautiful. Anything you want. I'm here.
Okay. Can we send you a questionnaire?
Sure can.
Quite detailed, and we'd sure appreciate it if you'd fill it in for us.
This is weird, huh?
Have you ever seen one of these things before?
No, but I'll tell you something. Last year, you know who Travis Walton is?
Oh, yes.
We went up there. We know him, okay? We went up there out of curiosity to talk to him about it. And it was the same day last year that we went up there, which is today, that we saw that thing up in Heber.
You know Travis Walton personally?
We all know him as an acquaintance. We went up to his house out of curiosity.
Oh, I see.
To him,
okay.
You know. But what's so strange about it is last year, okay, 1 year later today was when we were up there last year.
That is a coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah, it's weird. You know, I don't even know if I believe Travis or not, but after this...
Maybe they got you lined up for the next ride.
Don't say that. I don't want to go yet.
What was your husband's first name?
Excuse me?
What was your husband's
name? Daniel.
Daniel. Okay, what's your rating?
I'm 22. My husband's 26.
Okay, well, we sure appreciate this report, and we'll get on it right away, and if we come up with any additional information, we'll get back to you and let you know.
Okie doke.
Would you be available for an interview if we could somebody in there?
Sure, anything you want.
Okay, where did you get our number?
The Federal Aviation gave it to me, and they told me to call you up right away.
Would that be the tower at the airport?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
You can call them back up and verify it.
Okay, thanks again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's a lot of information.
Yeah.
But I first want to say,
yeah,
at the beginning of the conversation, she's like, I got to make this quick. It's collect. She is very frugal in this whole thing. And then she does ramble on for like a good amount of time. And it's just like, I thought you said it was quick and collect. So
yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know, back in the day, she was calling collect. It was on the UFO Reporting Center's dime. It wasn't on her dime.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if you remember, but like early 90s, you would like use a payphone, you would call collect. But like, and that brief moment where they're like, you've received a collect call from you. Hey, mom, this is Jay. I'm doing all right. I got to call you back. And like, you just like hurry up and say a message for that like 10 seconds of free like audio. And they're like, would you like to accept? And then the person can say no. I'm the only one that did that. Other folks out there did that, I guarantee you.
Oh, I'm sure. I just never called collect from a payphone.
Shit.
I just never called people.
I've never used a phone.
Not until it was closer to free.
But yeah, so there's a lot of information there, obviously. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of key points in that information. Again, tried to give everybody a heads up of some key things to, you know, watch out for there. One of the things that stood out to me, though, other than the fact that like this thing was literally interfering with how fast the car was going, Yeah. Right? Like the speedometer and everything was like messing up. The husband wasn't messing with the gas or anything like that. He was trying to keep it all the same, but it was like everything was screwing up. Was the fact that they were getting buzzed for 2 hours with a break in the middle by a UFO, a massive UFO. Right?
Yeah. You know, it was just Tom Cruise in there being like, we're going to do a flyby of this car.
but that's insane.
That's like, a lot, you imagine long time.
Being out in the desert, right? Traveling down the highway and just a UFO won't leave you the hell alone. Like, you literally pull over at a gas station. And then the locals at the gas station said, yep, been seeing that for a few days as this thing is just off in the distance. And she watched it, or they watched it come in when it was just looked like a star. Mm-hmm. Like, it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until it was literally 25 feet away from them.
That's crazy.
Which is nuts. Also, there is a key point there, and this you know, holler back to the Mojave incident. But apparently, when you're in the Southwest, if all the campgrounds are full, that's like your ticket to have a horrifying UFO experience, because that's the same thing that happened to them in the Mojave incident. Is they're like, well, guess we'll just go into the canyons because the campgrounds are full. The same thing happened to them. They're like, well, guess we'll just drive home because the campgrounds are full. And it's like, now a UFO is attacking.
That's where the UFOs are. They're in the canyons. They're on the roads when nobody else is.
Yeah. But like,
they got scared.
To me, this is nuts. Like a 2 hour long case. And nothing beats actual witness audio, in my opinion. Because to me, you know, obviously I've heard this audio a lot, but like, you can hear the very honest, like, panic in her voice as she's going through. Like, she's worked up about this, and like, to the point that, like, you know, there's that kind of like classic, like, husband and wife kind of like bickering happening back and forth. Like, they're worked
where was
up
it
about,
oh, you don't know where this is,
where was it, come
where
on
were
hurry
we?
Up
where were we hurry
come
up
on.
We're in collect. Yeah.
He's trying to talk to me while I'm talking to you, just like, there's so many lines, but it is so honest and so real. Uh-huh. You know, and you can tell that they just, you know, had a 2 hour long situation where they're like a little bit on edge about this whole thing.
There's one thing I noted too about it when she's talking about the shape of it.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's a barrel shape. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those before. And I was just like, I think he's seen a barrel.
I think she was saying like, you know, I don't know if you've seen a barrel shaped UFO before. That's how I took it. I've also listened to this like way too many times while I was like working on the audio, trying to like clear out static, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I also don't know if she said a sparrow shape or a barrel shape.
I think barrel shape makes more sense.
I've listened to it.
That's what
many
I
times.
Heard. Barrel. I mean, if you're digging deep into it, it could be sparrow, but I don't think there's a.
Also, a weird thing to knock the person for. Yeah. Have you ever seen one? Have you ever seen a sparrow?
Have you seen a sparrow? Come on. Do you get outside? So,
there was a key thing though here. So while the thing, you know, she said, you know, it was like the size of like a 750 or a 747, huge, right? And that it was giant with like dome on top of it, right? And lights changing.
Yep.
She kept mentioning the prevalence of the blue lights around it, and how it was just around, like, I believe, like the edges of the dome itself, right? So not around the entirety of the craft, but an actual narrow section in the middle of it, I believe.
Yeah.
Right. So that is a key point for this next piece of audio that I'm going to play, is like where those blue lights are positioned and how far away it was from them. You know, at the closest, it was, she said it was 25 feet away from them. And let me see my notes here, 55 to 75 feet, like off the ground.
Yeah.
Right. Although at one point it did go 25 feet in front of the car.
Yeah, yeah.
Across the fucking highway, circling back behind them. Da 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 da. Also, another key point is that while she wasn't sure if it landed, she was, you know, kind of freaking out, thinking that it maybe landed, it ultimately went west.
Yep.
Right?
West was the thing, even though if at the beginning she didn't know which way west and east was.
Yeah. But
she,
I mean,
you know, but it, who knows, when you're going on a highway, you're just like, I don't know exactly.
Well, that is the honesty of like these types of things. That's where, you know, pulling in all the context clues from like how they go through, how they break it down. Like, you're not hearing a perfectly filtered, regurgitated, you know, like everybody's in agreement on it and they've told the story a thousand times. You're actually hearing it raw while they're still panicked.
Yeah, where they're looking.
Yeah, yep. They're still figuring out. And because they were going down, what was it? I had it written down. It was I-17 going south into Phoenix, Arizona, right? Uh-huh. If you're going straight south, that means to the right of you is west. To the left of you is east, right? If you're going north, then to the left of you is west. The right of you is east. So anytime, if you do go back and listen to the audio, anytime you're hearing that, left is east, right is west. You know?
Yeah. They did mention, too, that as it was changing colors, so like the white dome thing that was underneath of it, as soon as it got into Phoenix, it turned red too. Was like a
important
thing.
Yeah, it was mad
thing.
That it didn't get them. I'm
it was
assuming.
Pissed. It couldn't find a parking spot in Phoenix, so it was really pissed.
But that shit's crazy to me. Sorry, I had to share this piece with you. It's just nuts. All right, so now hopping into the next one. Again, there's going to be context clues. Oh, yeah, and final thing. Actually, one more thing before I forget. This whole ordeal started at about 7:30 p.m. And ended at about 9:35. So about 2 hours, right? They were being messed with by this UFO. So it ended at 9:35. Now to the next piece.
Would have tried to raise you via radio, but we didn't have anything. We were being played. UFO was playing tag with us.
Really?
Yeah.
How many were you up there?
We got four pilots, pilot, co-pilot, and two EMTs.
Jesus Christ. When did this happen?
About 45 minutes ago. I just got down and into town. Like I said, this is sort of strange because our magnetic compass was going crazy, gyro compass was going crazy, our OMI was crazy, couldn't raise anything, transmit nothing on the radio. We just generalized messing up all our controls.
Can you give it to me right from the beginning?
Okay, I had a earlier flight took off at 5 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
And we were buzzing around for 2.5 hours, sat down for fuel, go back up, you know, just keep our flight books current. And about 7 o'clock, we were about halfway in between Seattle and Boston, in that area, going back to Payne, sat down for the night. And then we started getting plane tag. UFO came out from our starboard side and downward, started doing loop-to-loops around us. And then we can go off maybe 2-3 miles up in front of us and come back straight at us, and at the last possible moment, to go underneath us. It happens doing it for about 10 minutes. We just kept on moving straight, you know, back to pain. In the meantime, I was on the radio trying to get a patch through to you, report it while in progress. Unfortunately, that's when I noticed that radio wasn't working. Intercoms would start where there was static in the intercoms. The intercoms tied through the radio anyway. And then I looked down on the panel and noticed a few of the controls were starting to go crazy.
Okay. What kind of plane were you flying?
A helicopter, HU-3H.
How many aboard?
Four.
Do you have the names of the other people?
I've got the names, and I've got them right in the affidavits right now.
Are we going to be able to get those other witnesses?
I don't think there was any other witnesses other than the crew members.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, are we going to get a list of those guys?
Yeah. Plus the signed and sworn affidavits.
Great.
Revealing. Now, I got your address. I'll mail them out to you when I get a hold of them.
Uh-huh. Okay. Nobody had a camera, huh?
That was just a routine flight, you know, just keep our books up. If we were up there looking for something, 10-1, somebody would have a camera.
Yeah.
But, well, like, just looking at it without the infrared glasses that we have, you know, the goggle, we could, it was a white luminous object.
Uh-huh.
It was in like an egg shape with the pointed head flying forward. Oh. And like, we weren't on the onboard radar, we weren't returning anything.
Did you talk to anybody on the ground about it?
Not until we touched down.
Oh, they didn't get anything on radar either?
No, our onboard radar wasn't returning it. But we had a couple airplanes that we were showing.
Yeah.
But we didn't. But the onboard wouldn't register the UFO.
Any visual estimate of the size?
I'd say about 8 feet long, 3.5 feet, 4 feet high.
Hmm. How close do you think it got to you?
I'd think within 50 feet easy.
Did this interference, electronic and instrument interference, continue until this thing moved away?
Yeah. It was just as soon as the thing took back off into the clouds, everything cleared up.
Which direction was it heading when she went out?
Northwest.
Is that the way it came in?
Came in. Well, it came in from the southeast.
Southeast, okay.
And it's like we were flying magnetic north at that time, you know, trying to clear through SeaTac's pattern.
Yes. Okay. What was your estimated altitude?
Well, first of all, there was no reaction to the UFO on our altimeter, and we were flying at 1500.
Okay. Can you give me another rundown regarding the maneuverability of this thing?
It would just, first of all, it was doing circles completely around it.
Uh-huh.
You know, it maybe, the perimeter, doing loops around it at about the distance of the prop for our rotors. It was like 10, 15 feet off our rotors. And then just going to look like somebody drew a compass. With a compass, drew a circle.
Uh-huh.
It was like a perfect circle around us. And then it just took off straight ahead, straight at us. It had to have been flying at 1500, coming straight at us, like 600-700 yards in front of us. It ducked under it.
Ducked under you, okay. Did anybody see it as it ducked under and came out the stern?
Well, we don't have any windows in the stern, so I slid open, snapped my belt, my safety belt on, and snapped open the door. What it did was, it was after like the second pass.
I see.
It looked out, it flew, came up under, back up to 1500, and then like did a loop and went over the top of it, coming back, turned out to run.
Could we get your telephone number again?
I'm at the Boston Police Department. We don't have our phone in yet.
Oh, I see. Okay. Who was in charge of that flight?
Me.
Did you say anything when you landed? I mean, did you report this to the people up there?
Oh, I went up to the tower and find out if they had anything on radar, and that was just about it.
Uh-huh.
Then I told the guys on the other on our flight to sign up an affidavit, sign it, and then get it to me as soon as possible so that I can get them out to you.
Great. Okay, well, we sure appreciate the report. Right. You're the lucky one.
Yeah, I'll probably get them in the mail by Saturday.
Oh, we sure appreciate that.
Because I'm not sure, but Friday night we might call for another flight.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
See you later, Bob.
Bye.
Bye. All right. What are your thoughts?
Well, Bob seemed to be really disappointed that nobody had a camera at first. Nobody had a camera, huh? And they're just like, well, nobody ever has a camera when they're watching UFOs for the most part. You're just kind of like, look at that thing. And especially because they were all like, working, I imagine.
Yeah, it's a pilot, a co-pilot, and two EMTs.
Yeah, they were either working or training or, you know, whatever they're doing up there. But
I don't want my helicopter pilot using a camera.
Yeah. Honestly. Yeah. Oh, do you see Mount Washington? You see Mount Washington over there? They're
Mount
like
Rainier.
In Seattle. Yeah. Mount Rainier over there. It's like, what? Taking photos. And he's like, can you watch the road? Watch the air?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you know, we can talk about the first connection is that it came from southeast and it went out northwest. And so that was a very one, which southeast of the Seattle area is obviously Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's a good start so far in heading out. And it kind of acted like the other, you know, UFO. It was just running in circles around them, kind of messing with them, playing a little tag.
Blue and white lights.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
including on the dome. And there is the fact that, and this is important to keep in mind here, because they both give times, right?
Yep.
But Seattle is an hour behind Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
So 9:30 in Phoenix is 8:30 in Seattle. The times match up within minutes, right?
Yep.
At least, you know, in my opinion, the first call, right? Definitely frazzled, you know? And like, they were also kind of guesstimating on time. They're like, when was it? It was about, 7:30 and 9:35. You know, like they were kind of doing it. In the other situation, at least with like the pilot, that shit is logged. Like the exact times are being logged. He was speaking with way more confidence about the whole situation, you know, well, because everything was being registered.
Difference in people too, you know, is like that's his job to be flying around, notating wind direction, notating, you know, actual direction that he was going, where it was going, where he was over, what time. And those people were just like, what the hell is that? You know, and they're just sitting there looking at it as they're driving.
Yeah.
And it's just like completely different, opposite ends of the spectrum, but still seeing the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool to see how they kind of coalesce and over what they saw.
From the speedometer,
the
vehicle like slowing down, speedometer like messing up, to the odometer, to their altitude, their ability to read altitude, their compasses, all their navigation equipment on board, and their radio. Everything going completely haywire right now. The first in the first call, she said that there wasn't any radio interference, but she did say that when traveling through the mountains, there's a normal amount of radio interference.
Yeah.
Right. So it didn't really seem like they were paying attention to that. That was just kind of like could be anything.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was affecting the same types of instrumentation in both vehicles stood out to me. Now, the next big thing, though, in my opinion, is the lady said that it was the size of a 747, right?
Yep.
It was huge. But she did identify the fact that near the dome-ish shape in the middle, in the concentrated, the smaller area, was where the blue and white lights were kind of, like, at. Now, the pilot's call, which, again, like, the pilot's call took place at night, right? At least, you know, if it's February, right, it's pitch black by 8:30, right?
Yep.
Like, in the winter, it is dark at, like, what, 5 o'clock?
6 o'clock,
you know?
Yeah.
The other one started around, like, 7 o'clock. I'm gonna give her the benefit of the doubt or give them the benefit of the doubt. They also had 2 hours of looking at it, right?
Yep.
And it was closer to the evening. So I'm going to give them the doubt of, like, they actually got to see more of the craft, like, lit up. Where in the case of the actual, like, the pilot, along with the co-pilot and the two EMTs, it was pitch black outside.
Yeah. It was only, they only had, like, 10 minutes, too, is what they said. They only had, like, 10 minutes compared to 2 hours, like you're saying.
Yeah. And they were also actively trying to fly a helicopter that wasn't able to read its own altitude. They couldn't tell what direction they were. There was probably a sense of panic is what I'm trying to say going on. You know, while it seemed like they kept their cool, if all of those instruments are going wrong while you're in a helicopter, kind of a big deal, because helicopters don't necessarily like glide to the ground when something bad happens.
No, they drop.
Yeah. So, you know, shout out to them for keeping it cool. But
yeah,
I don't know. I came across these two cases. The timing, it's close, but I think with the first party involved, like the husband and wife, right, and the wife calling up and reporting it, they were more kind of like, it was about this, it was about that. They were still very clearly frazzled. And they even said, you know, like she even said, I'm so nervous right now, I'm so worked up. You know, she's honest about that, which like who wouldn't be?
Yep.
And then with the pilot, right? He just seemed more excited to report it. He even said, he's like, I tried to call you from the air. He was just waiting for his opportunity. But he was also like calm, cool, collected about it. You know?
Yeah. Well, there's two things I want to bring up, too, is the difference between the way that they described it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it can also just be from where they saw it. Like, her description was barrel shape or sparrow shape. I don't know, whatever you want to go with. I think it was barrel shape. So, that would barrel shape. Sense. Yeah. And then they also said the pilots said it was more like an egg shape, right? So, which is kind of like, they're very barrel and an egg are similar.
Yeah.
And it depending on where you're looking at it from, you
and
know,
the type
so
of
I
egg.
Imagine and the type of egg, you know, it could be a Kinder egg, could be a
quail eggs.
A quail eggs, yeah. Platypus egg.
Don't even get me started on the platy eggs.
Yep. It could be any of those things, but just like they're it's almost similar, but not too similar to being like, oh, you know, maybe I don't know. It just seems a little logical that it's going to be a little different depending on who's looking at it or where you're looking at it from. Also, they never mentioned the red light, nor did they mention like really changing lights.
Yeah.
But they only saw it for 10 minutes and they saw it for 2.5 hours. So it's like, you know, maybe it just wasn't feeling, you know, showy at that point, you know, or it wasn't angry because it couldn't find parking in Phoenix with the red light. So, And then, but they also said nobody had any radar detection of it. So for thinking about that is just like when we used to talk about how maybe there's flaps of things that they jump in and out of like, dimensions and stuff like that. And that could, you know, kind of be maybe what was happening, but you know, that's just going deep into theories, you know, right now for that. But
yeah, but I would say like the thing that, you know, cause I've gone through and I'm still digging through like hundreds and hundreds of like these calls and, you know, police dispatch recordings and stuff, you know, it didn't necessarily end with Trumbull County UFO chase. Like I'm still digging through a lot of these. Sometimes they are way too abstract or way too boring. The details are fascinating, but the actual like audio kind of sucks, you know? Still digging through these, but these two stood out to me. Like I said, like, you know, it was a brow raiser to me because it was the behavior and the directions. It was the time of day, behavior and directions. Both vehicles were literally being circled and kind of in a sense like taunted by UFO. Yeah. With similar colors.
Yep.
Right? And the times of days, just frankly, they match up. Like, they match up along with the direction. So you had the pilots call in after the lady from Phoenix called in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Although I will say in the actual, the documented, like, recordings from New Fork, they have them out of order. But, you know, like they were just keeping track of all these recordings and listening and labeling them. While they have the dates and everything perfectly aligned, you know, the second call was labeled 157. The first call that we heard was labeled 160. But when you actually listen to the times and you actually look at the time zones, those are switched. Right. So we have the times of day are super close and we have the behavior super close, like literally this UFO. Circling around people, messing with people.
You know? Just playing around.
Colors are lined up perfectly the same, and instrumentation in vehicles is completely failing.
Yep.
And people both, like, everybody's reporting that it was, like, low-key, like, aggressive. Like, I think the pilot said, like, they were playing tag.
Yeah, you know? It was going, like, driving at them and then going underneath them.
Yeah, like, and, like, it was 10 to 15 feet off the rotors. Is fucking dangerous for
That's
a helicopter.
That's terrifying. Yeah, just sitting there like, can you not get this close? You know, like maybe it could just be like, bink, like a little devil thing just going up there and like, bink, boom.
Little gremlin.
And they go in the ground. Yeah, a little gremlin going down to the ground. But yeah, that's honestly terrifying because I know he's sounded more excited because he probably lived and they were just like, what's going on? But they're just like ready to show this guy. I do want to make clear too, as well, the person that was receiving these calls was
So specifically the person who was receiving the call was Robert Gribble, right? He had started collecting information on phenomenon and started an organization back in 1955, eventually beginning the Aerial Phenomenon Research Group, the APRG, which circulated a newsletter. I'm reading straight from the website, from the New Fork website. Newsletter detailing new cases. In late 1974, Gribble converted the Phenomenon Research Reporting Center to allow for a basically creating a public place that the public could call in and report any of their experiences, right? Mm-hmm. With specifically a tone and an air of being non-judgmental, right? So he didn't want to be judgmental of anybody calling in. And there's actually a whole set of practices that I've come across that they really, really tried to stress at the center. 99.99999% of the time, it was just Robert Gribble getting calls at all times of the day. So sometimes these reports are coming in at like 3 a.m, 4 a.m. And he's like, hello. Yeah, that's fascinating.
Great.
Wow. You know,
can I help you?
He sounds exhausted. And I'm sure like, you know, when things popped off with like eventually, although I think, I don't know if he was in there for the Phoenix Lights. That was eventually Peter Davenport, which if anybody else is like a huge Art Bell fan, you will know the name Peter Davenport because him and Art Bell were such close friends. Peter Davenport was constantly calling in with updates about UFO events and things that were going on. But Robert Gribble ran this from effectively 1955 all the way up to 1994. Right, this guy was dedicated to becoming and what would eventually become the National UFO Reporting Center, New Fork, with the first call actually being received November 11th, 1974. Right, so like this dude was running this public service, honestly, and like taking calls from all across the country, promoting it, reaching out to air traffic control centers all across the country, and being like, if UFO reports come in, send them to me. Call me. Tell people that are calling from your town, from your city, from your state, whatever, tell them to call me and report it immediately, right? And sending this out to police stations and stuff. A huge resource. And I really wish that there was, I mean, New Fork is still around. I think Peter Davenport is still running it, which is insane. God, that man never gets any sleep. But yeah, so that's who collected it. And there are, you know, if you dig around on the internet, you can find literally hundreds and thousands of calls.
Yep.
Digging through them and then cleaning up the audio, totally different story.
Yeah. I can be fair. You know, honestly, the police officers and the, you know, the 911 operators were probably just like, thank God we can send these to someone so we don't have to sit here and listen to these. Granted, the Trumbull County UFO.
Oh, she was ready.
911. She was in it. She was ready to go. She was like, "Let's get me in that police car. I'm heading out there."
Yeah,
but you know,
20 minutes.
Yeah, 20 minutes. She was ready to go. But you know, Gribble was just sitting there for the first calls, just being like, "Come on, come on," like poking his phone until the first person calls and he's like, "Hello, hello, hello, hello. Oh yeah, I'm Gribble. Robert Gribble. You can who are you? State your name." And he's like getting his first, you know, he's getting used to talking on the phone again. He's like,
"Wait, Mom,
give me
is
the
this you
call.
Again? Mom, this is you.
Mom, this is you. Oh, MoMA. Oh, okay, MoMA. Oh, MoMA Branch.
Gotcha.
That's
gotcha.
Cool. Yeah, can you state where you were?" Yeah, and he's pretty much, I can't hear you. Can you speak up? No, good. I sent another Gremlins prank phone call. This is not funny, Gremlins. Hangs up on him.
Yeah. but yeah, no, massive public service, though. I like
that. Yeah, for sure.
20-something
oh, yeah.
years, he was holding that shit down. And actually, for 20-something years, he was recording and documenting and taking notes and frankly never sleeping. And, you know, for... Yeah. 20 years before that, so for 40 years, 20 years before that, he had started the organization, which eventually became that, right? So for 40 years, this man was holding it down.
That's crazy.
Fucking legend. That's all
you
I'm
know
saying.
Who's going to be that guy, that legendary status?
Betsabe?
Well, no, our great friend that runs the Bigfoot Mapping Project.
Hell yeah.
Because he started this thing. Yeah, he started that thing so like just ground up, you know, and now it's kind of just growing and people are putting stuff in. He's just collecting data, which is like a king, especially in especially in UFOs, paranormal, like Data is freaking king. Like the all the questions he asked just to get these tiny little details that like probably the, especially the first couple wasn't thinking of, you know, they're not really thinking of like, oh, what degree west is it going? They're not thinking about like, how close was it? Like, how big was it? What was the exact dimensions of this? And they're just like looking at this thing kind of amazed. And granted, in 2.5 hours, you can gather a lot of data with your eyes, you know?
Yeah.
But like in 10 minutes, those other people got pretty much the same amount of data that, you know, because that's their job, that the, you know, the couple got, you know, maybe even more detailed. So just thinking about that, how much data he has there, that's some of it irrelevant, some of it he's probably just like, okay. Imagine being him and knowing something is fake already, and at the beginning, and just like having this one person that calls in all the time, and he's just like, oh, it's you. And then he's like, oh, so can you tell me your name and where it's going? And he's just like, please, he's not even writing it down. He's just like letting it go.
There. That's funny that you said that. There is a case on there where the person, like whoever was kind of going through and summarizing a lot of these calls after they were recorded and on the dates and stuff, they put specifically for training folks, they said, notice how Robert does not judge the person, even though they are clearly having a mental break.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And
for sure.
Like they may like it, like there's a whole set of notes where they're like, notice how he's still like respecting them. He's not being judgmental, even though in the audio you can hear that the person has like kind of like for whatever reason snapped and is kind of like. It's very hard to believe them. Let's just put it that way. You know, like what the person's saying, how they're behaving, the way they're contradicting themselves and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that's like literally a note in the training process where they were like, look, record it all. Like record it all.
Yeah.
Put it all down because you don't know how the dots are going to connect later.
True.
Which is so important, you know, because some people literally might have their world crumble if they see a UFO and they might not sound super stable at the time. Other folks might just be totally nonchalant, like, yep, totally come down, took my baby. You know, like, they're just fine with it, which sounds even more crazy after you hear them say it. You know, you're like, damn, how are you so calm? Like,
oh my God, imagine after people call in and then the aliens and UFO calls in and they're like, yeah, I saw this car and it becomes like a misconnections from Craigslist.
No.
And he's like, I was trying to abduct this person and I missed. Red Toyota traveling down I-9. UFO missed encounters, missed abductions.
We made eye contact as you almost ran into me.
Yeah, as I got 10 feet away from you.
No, that's terrible. That's awesome, though.
Damn,
we need to get on Craigslist.
I was going to say, that needs to be merchandise.
Yes, UFO misconnections.
That's going to be our first t-shirt, UFO misconnections.
This is great. But yeah, so wrapping up here, Joey, what are your thoughts about the relation between these? I'm picking like a 75 to 85%. It was the same damn thing.
I might go a little lower.
Okay.
I might be 40 to 45% just because... It's around the same time, and it's I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of stuff in the sky at this point, and it seemed like it could be 40 to 50%. I'm not sold completely. Again, I am allowed to have my opinions on these things unlike Robert. He has to be straight-laced and straight even on it. I 40 to 50% is my thing on it. Just, you know, it's not super clear to me that they're the same thing. But it really the only thing is just because it wasn't made super clear in the beginning by the first couple. I guess I'm comparing apples to oranges because you're comparing somebody that does this for their job gets data, and the second one, somebody who's just caught unawares and like kind of freaking out, like you're saying. But like, I guess I would want to see is if a radar operator, you know, like helicopter, you know, this is the scientist in me. Radar operator in Seattle gets it And then a radar operator in Phoenix sees it, you know, and they're both seeing the same thing within like 10-minute time span, 15-minute whatever. Same thing, same light, same altitude, stuff like that. And so that's the scientist within me, that the control group is there. It's the same, you know, that the...
Yeah.
But 40, 50% still a lot for me. So I am, you know,
and I will,
how I am.
Now that you've said all that, I will give you a little bit more details to make you look terrible.
Good.
Those were the only two reported cases that night.
Okay.
And the only two reported cases within about 3 or 4 days of each other.
Okay.
Which, in my opinion, sorry for leaving that out until like the 11th hour.
I love the throw it in my face, destroy his argument person. But you know what? You know what?
But
that's reported, okay?
Yeah.
Not everything is reported, you know?
Okay, scientist, now we're just going off the scale. No, but I will say, like, the strength to me is the fact that those are the only two recorded cases, right?
Uh-huh.
And that it was the distance or the direction that they went in, the colors involved, but also ultimately it was the behavior. It was the behavior was what really, really stuck with me, which is why I rank it so high in terms of like potentially connected. Because, I mean, sure, there's a million and one reportings of sightings and, you know, even like buzzes and like near misses and things. There's so many cases out there that's enough to make a podcast dedicated to it. You know, there are so many out
there. We are not doing that.
Next week, I'm not doing that.
You're
going no, but there are so many cases and so many events and stuff like that. But not a lot where the UFO is quite literally circling like something, like a freaking like bee in the summertime just circling around your head and you're trying to swat at it. There's not a lot of cases that I can think of where it's like the UFO is behaving like that for an extended length of time. Not just kind of like looking at you and taking off, but like with the helicopter, it's like 10 minutes. With the car, 2 hours, including a rest stop in between, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like they are literally chasing them like you just got coated in honey and are running through a bee's nest, you know? Like they're just bzz, like buzzing around you. That's not very common, at least not by what I've come across.
Yeah.
So that and the colors and the shape, the barrel-ish, egg-ish shape with like the positioning of the lights and the way the times went and the directions, That's putting it up in the 75-85% range for me, where I'm like, if it ain't, then they cousins. That's all
you
I'm
up,
saying.
You went up a little more. You went up about 5-10%.
Yeah, I'm going up a little
bit
more.
Up,
here,
you're
like,
convincing yourself here.
Damn, I'm good.
I'm so good.
I'm
probably convincing the audience here.
No, but it's all of that. It's the directions, the shapes, the colors, right? But also, ultimately, the behavior and the effect on electronics. And the direction and the time, like it's too many things where it's like that thing shot off in a westerly direction. Here you have some people hour later, 15 minutes later, however long, maybe a second later, you know, that are like, yeah, it came up out of the southeast. It's just like, bro, literally came up from the direction it just harassed people over 1,000 miles away. And it's like doing the same shit, doing the same shit, you know, so. Not quite as scientific as you. You know, we don't have control groups. All right. This is not a double blind study or double blind test. But you know what I'm saying? If it walks like a UFO and quacks like a UFO, you know, probably a UFO driven by a duck. But anyways, thank you all. And please, please, please let us know what you think. We'll have a little poll in the bottom of this episode. If you're on Spotify, you can click on it and be like, how much percent do I agree? And if you think we're totally off our rockers, let us know. We'd love to read that on air. So shoot us an email, contact@blackcat.report. Or very simply, you can just hit us up on Instagram, Black Cat Report, or any of the other social medias, although it might take us a while to find you there. And it doesn't matter if you're listening to this like 5 years from now. Hit us up. I'm sure we'll still be doing it. Yeah, we're still going to be doing it.
You can tell who you agree with more, if it's me or Gil, if it's Joey or Gil. You can say, man, I think Joey's off his rocker because he still believes in flat earth. You can be like, Gil's crazy because he's crazy, just in general, which is true.
Very true.
But I, you know, preface it, I don't believe in flat earth again. Anyways, we have to do that disclaimer every time I say it.
Cause I think our lawyers told us we had to.
Yeah, yeah. We are now hiring lawyers. So
legally required,
legally. Yeah. We'll get sued over that flat earth stuff.
This is not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any symptom, disease, or illness. This statement has not been approved or evaluated by the FDA. Please consult with your medical professional and or practitioner and or doctor before consuming any and all Black Cat Report episodes.
How do you feel as the executive producer of Black Cat Report, Dada?
Yeah.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Was it a good episode?